Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today we're talking physical therapy, and we'll start with looking at the Achilles tendon and other lower leg problems with our two guests today. Physical therapist back, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, one of them, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, welcome back.
It's always great to be here, Larry.
And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Lori, good to see you.
Awesome to be here.
As we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Let us know about your lower leg pain. Are you suffering from an ankle injury, perhaps, or recovering from surgery on your Achilles tendon? We'll take your general physical therapy questions as well. And the number to call is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Great to have you with us. Lori, let's start with you. You brought a study about Achilles tendinopathy, and we've had listeners call in about this in the past enough times, but tell us about the condition first and what are the symptoms?
Sure. Well, most everyone is familiar with your Achilles tendon and where it exists on the backside of your ankle. And you did use the term tendinopathy, Larry, which is different than tendinitis. In my lifetime, in the past, we've always called everything that affected a tendon tendinitis, and the suffix itis means inflammation. But what we've learned over the years is that there isn't always inflammation present. So you take an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen or naproxen, and you don't necessarily get better. And it's because there isn't always inflammation present. Tendinopathy is a more general term of any kind of problem with the tendon. Most often what we see is degeneration of the tendon, and it's something we see as we age, as degenerative changes in the tendon, just like you see degenerative changes in your joint. So this was a study looking at 29 randomized controlled trials for treating Achilles tendinopathy. So the 29 trials encompassed 42 different treatments, right?
Whoa.
So, right.
Oh my
goodness. So some people may remember, and probably I'm the only one who remembers this, but physical therapists remembered in the New York Times several years ago did sort of a scathing article on patellofemoral pain around the knee. And they said they went to five different physical therapists and got five different treatment recommendations. Well, to those of us in the field, that's not surprising. And I think this study sort of bears that out. People in this research looked at 42 different treatments. And basically what they found at the end of this was that the quality of most of that research was pretty darn low. So it's hard to draw conclusions. But what they did conclude was that active treatments are better than wait and see or passive treatments.
So get started right away.
Typically includes exercise, yes. And that was better at both the 3-month and the 12-month point. So active exercises, active treatment classes had clinically meaningful benefits over a wait and see. For those people who say, oh, my Achilles hurts, I'm going to rest and then I'm going to go back to activity, no. No, it's a non-starter.
How do you exercise it?
So that's a great question. So there were like 40 different ways to exercise it. So there are standard strengthening, you know, like heel raises and so on. There's a lot of information about what's called eccentric exercises, and that's the lowering phase of a muscle contraction. You think of lifting a weight. You have lifting, which is the concentric or shortening phase, and then you have the lowering. That's the eccentric. And there's a lot of research on using eccentrics. There's also a lot of research on using isometrics, and that is where you tighten the muscle and push against some immovable force so there's no movement happening, but you're activating the muscle tendon unit.
Right. And the other thing with this whole 42 interventions is it's also important to look at contributing factors. So why is this person getting Achilles tendinopathy just on one side? So looking up and down the chain and doing exercises to identify impairments that may be a factor. For example, maybe the hip is weaker on that side and you need some specific strengthening exercises for your hip on that side. those may be some of the exercises that are provided to a person who comes to see a therapist that is individualized to them. So I think that's part of the reason we run this gamut on so many different interventions, is because we're looking at a menagerie of contributing factors that can be individualized to the patient.
And I think the individualized point is really important, and the authors of this paper also point that out. They say that the pre-injury activity level is really important in dosing the exercise. So it's not a one size fits most. How active you are and what kind of loads you're putting on your Achilles influence how that exercise is dosed by your healthcare professional. And there's no way to distinguish or to sort out in the literature people who are highly active versus people who are sedentary. So it's
meeting the tissue where it's at. It's knowing what the tissue has been doing previously, how much I can load it, and individualizing that program for the individual that's sitting in front of you as a patient, which I think is so, so critical.
So going back to that New York Times article, I imagine there were some follow-up letters to the editor.
Oh, yes, there were. And, you know, particularly when you're talking about tendinopathies in a range of people of activity levels, body types, et cetera, or patellofemoral pain, where there are a number of different causes of that, from hip weakness to hypermobility to hypomobility to acute trauma, all those things affect patellofemoral pain. It is not a single entity. Most of these things are not a single entity. Right. And that's one of the mistakes we make, is assuming because you have put a diagnostic label on it that it is this and it needs to be treated like that.
Bradley in Whitewater has a question or a comment that relates, I think, at least to the Achilles. Let's go there. Bradley, hi.
Yes, hi there. About 8 years ago, I had a 95% rupture of my Achilles. It was just a point and turn of my foot, and it just felt like someone like popped me with a sledgehammer from the back.
Yep.
I didn't really know what was going on at the time, but I knew I couldn't walk, and that was a problem. The first surgeon that I went to, he said, well, let's just not do anything. It'll heal on its own. The more I thought about that, the more I thought, I don't want to deal with the amount of scar tissue that's going to be there from it healing on its own. Got a second opinion. The surgery went great. And I feel like today the Achilles that had the surgery performed is stronger than my other side. So I'm just really, really happy that I went ahead and did the surgery.
That's
great. And the comment you made about you felt like you got hit in the back with a sledgehammer, that's a classic thing patients will say. They feel they got kicked from behind, but there was no one behind them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people actually hear the rupture. And it the Achilles rupture many times happens in a little bit older demographic. The classic person I see it in or have seen it in a lot is the high school referee.
Who's
refereeing the basketball game in their mid-40s, 50s, and they do that back pedal and they turn to run, and all of a sudden they feel like they got kicked from behind. So Bradley brings up a good point about how should this be managed conservatively or surgically, and there's research that shows support of each. I do think for a 95% tear in a young
person,
it's probably best to have surgery. I've seen people treat it conservatively in a little bit older population with a great outcome. So again, it's individualizing the program for the patient.
Right, exactly.
Bradley, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Rob in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Rob.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. I recently developed a plantar fasciitis problem on my heel, and one of the things that's recommended for that is stretching a lot and stretching the Achilles tendon area. And I'm now a little bit worried about overdoing it because I had a friend who had an Achilles injury. And so I was just wondering if you have any advice on how to deal with that, manage plantar fasciitis, and other lower leg things related to all that.
Yeah, sure. Lori?
Yeah, so plantar fasciitis. So our day is complete with a plantar fasciitis question. So you are not alone there. So Yes, stretching your Achilles is useful. Remember that anytime you embark upon an exercise program that is different from your current level of activity, you do risk overdoing it. So work your way into that activity gently. I would hope that you're getting some advice, because there are ways to stretch your Achilles that are useful. There are ways to stretch your plantar fascia that are very useful for a plantar fasciitis. Our favorite tool for that is a night splint. And generally 2 to 3 months before you see this completely resolve with the night splint, but it's pretty darn useful and helpful. And the other question is that Jill mentioned earlier is, why one foot and not the other? Are you having plantar fasciitis in one side and not the other? And if so, why? So this is, again, why we would recommend you seeing somebody and get a good evaluation to understand what the cause of this is, whether there's anything else that needs to be treated along your kinetic chain, hip, knee, or the way you move and do things, the way you bear weight, the way you do your job, etc. So, yes, go into the Achilles stretching carefully. Add some plantar fascia stretching under the direction of a physical therapist.
Good luck. Thank you, Rob, for calling. Appreciate it. And Margaret and Franklin, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I am not having any trouble with my legs. I'm having trouble with terrible pain behind my right shoulder blade going down into my right hand through my little finger. A lot of tingling and numbness and constant pain now.
Is it just on one side, Margaret? Just on your right side?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Does it matter what position your neck is in? It sounds to me like I'm wondering if this is cloward signs and coming from more of a little bit of a cervical spine. So, Margaret, have you noticed any changes in your numbness and tingling into your hand if your neck is in a certain position?
No.
Okay.
No, it just seems to be almost constant now. Okay. I've had it for a few months, and it was getting better, and then all of a sudden it just started getting worse again. And I don't know why. No injury, no accident, nothing.
Okay, so have you seen your physician about this?
I'm trying to make an appointment, but I can't get in until the 15th of next month.
Okay.
I'm wondering if there's anything I can do at home.
You can see a physical therapist. You can see a physical therapist direct access in the state of Wisconsin. So you can make an appointment to see a physical therapist. I would go with one who specializes in spine, because it's more than likely coming from your neck. If it was just, for example, from your elbow down into your finger, then it could be a local problem in your arm. But given your shoulder blade all the way down your arm into your little finger, it's sounding more like it's coming from your cervical spine. So I would make an appointment to see a physical therapist and get an assessment there to get you started.
Not that I'm an expert, but I've done the show with you so many times.
Oh.
As soon as she said what her condition was, I thought immediately of the spine.
Unfortunately, yeah. And yeah. So that's a really good place to start. And I would encourage Margaret to see a physical therapist. Keep your physician appointment.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a lot of information to bring to your physician, because
yeah.
You've already started therapy. And so I think that's a really good strategy for you,
good
Margaret.
Good strategy. Margaret, thank you very much for calling. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our physical therapist, with us today. Lots of callers online. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org as well. Clara Neipert's our producer. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody. We're talking of, obviously, physical therapy issues. We've zeroed in a bit on managing your Achilles, your ankle, and lower leg pain, but of course we're taking other questions as well as we move along. Connie in Appleton has something for us, so let's go to Connie. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I have lower leg pain in my right leg in the shin, and I believe it's because of the impingement of the nerve at L4, L5, and the dermatome swinging around there. Do you know if, in addition to the walking that I do every day, which does help keep it from getting bad. Can I use any topical nerve reducing medication, like diclofenac? Is that the name of one?
Yep, that's it. Well, how certain are you that this pain is coming from L4, L5, and that it's not a local, say, for example, shin splint, posterior tibialis tendinopathy kind of thing?
I'm positive. It's been evaluated by my doctor, and I've been getting injections in my spine.
Oh, and that relieves those shin symptoms when you get injections?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So in that case, the diclofenac or Voltaren gel, that's not going to do anything applied locally because the source of your pain is in your back. So those gels are pretty darn good for things that are really superficial at the site of the inflammation. So, for example, a tennis elbow where the inflammation in that tendon is close to the surface of the skin. But because the origin of your problem is in your back and those tissues are buried very deep, I don't think it's going to do anything. Is it going to do any harm to try? No.
Not at all.
But I wouldn't be optimistic. I wouldn't tell my patients with L4 or L5 issues to run out and get it, if that answers your question.
Right? Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you very much, Connie, for calling. Carol in Green Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Carol.
So I've been dealing with posterior heel pain for the last 5 months. It is not plantar at all, and it kind of came on spontaneously. I'm a pretty regular walker. I've tried resting it. I've tried changing shoes. I've tried changing insoles. I've done a three-week course of naproxen. I elevated. Nothing makes much of a difference. I don't have any pain radiating up the back of my leg, no pain down onto the plantar surface of my foot. Very well localized right at the posterior heel.
Hmm. It sounds like insertional Achilles tendinopathy to me.
Like a pump bump.
Like a pump bump or right where the Achilles comes in and inserts on the calcaneus. And if you're a walker, that could definitely aggravate it.
So it's on the bone. It's not on the Achilles tendon or in that area.
It's on the bone.
It's on the bone.
Right on the bone. And it's actually almost hot, you know, warm to the touch. It's just tender.
Yeah.
That's a place where that Voltaren gel would work.
Right. Is there a little bump forming there, Carol? At all?
You know, in the mirror. Or, you know,
Let me check.
You can feel... Can you rub your hands over it to see if it feels like it's bigger than the other side?
Definitely is. There is a little bit of prominence there.
Okay, yeah. They call that a pump bump.
Yeah, we call that a pump bump, and it usually has to do with the fact that you have a little bit more pronation on that side. Have you seen a physical therapist, Carol?
No, but I had a knee replacement about 15 months ago.
Okay.
And, you know, of course, I had, you know, lots of therapy. And, of course, I had been babying this leg for the previous year or so before my surgery, you know, coming downstairs, carefully going upstairs. So I don't think, you know, it seems like my right leg is probably a little less, you know, strong than my left one.
Sure.
But I've been doing, you know, really well since my surgery.
Okay.
And this didn't start until about a year after the replacement where I'd already regained my activities, et cetera, you know. So
I think it's time to go back and see that physical therapist. Somebody who specializes in the lower extremity is great. Your gait mechanics may have changed oh so slightly with that total knee replacement that now you're loading your Achilles a little bit differently. Maybe it has to do with how your foot is landing on the ground when you get that little, what we call a pump bump or a Haglund's deformity. That usually is indicative of somebody who's going through a lot of pronation when they're walking. So seeing a physical therapist that specializes in lower leg, ankle, foot with your history will be key. And Lori has something to say.
I'm raising my hand.
She's raising
for those
her hand.
Who can't see. I'm going to put on my athletic trainer hat for a minute, and you can offload that by taking out a little bit of the extra in the back of your shoe there, or patting it or making like a donut pad that surrounds that bump so that the shoe is not putting pressure or rubbing right on that bump. So it lifts the shoe contact away from the back of the calcaneus.
Right. Carol may actually look in her shoes and see that she has a different spin or wear pattern in the back of her heel where she's kind of worn out that affected side.
Right.
And that's
what
Lori's talking about, is trying to offload that bump.
Yep.
There you go,
Carol. Just minimize the contact there.
Good luck, Carol. Thank you so much for calling. Mike in Baraboo has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Thank you. I have a medical condition that requires side sleeping, and it causes quite a bit of hip and shoulder pain. Mm. And I was told by my physical therapist to try a mattress topper, see if that would take some pressure off of my hip and shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a thickness that is recommended? And then I'm also wondering about gel versus foam.
Those are all great questions. And I think it unfortunately would have to be trial and error. I think a thicker mattress or thicker topper would probably be better. One of the things that I might even try before that is I'd probably try a really good body pillow.
Mm-hmm. I just wrote that down.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a body pillow, Mike, that you use? Because that can help offload your shoulder and elbow a little bit by kind of adjusting the weight through your body. Do you have a good body pillow?
I do have a good body pillow, and I've tried using that, and it doesn't help very much.
Okay. So then your next step is probably a mattress topper. You're right.
Yeah.
Start with a thicker one, though, from the sound of it.
It's going to be a matter of trial and error because there's not going to be a one size fits all for this. And I mean, you could, you know, with your body pillow, try more positions. I expect that you have done that, especially
for
if you're under the direction of a physical therapist who has helped walk you through that. But in general, for that kind of situation, a body pillow works well because instead of being either directly on your side or directly on your stomach, you can go at 45 degrees either forward or backward with that body pillow. And that's why we were recommending that. It takes you directly off your side and off your back.
Good luck, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. Rick in Grafton emailed us in July. He got rammed in the back of his foot by a shopping cart at the store. Hurt, but he could still walk. It's slowly improving. This is since last July. Is there exercise or stretching he can do to speed this along?
Well, that goes back to our opening remarks and that there's no one size fits all. Like, how active is Rick? What kind of activities does he want to get back to? Does he climb ladders during his day? So, you know, typically we recommend some stretching, some eccentric loading, some decline, like decline heel lowering activities. But he really should see a physical therapist, and one or two visits might be enough to get the right starting exercise program for him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say exactly what the dosage for him would be without a good examination.
Right.
So.
Okay. But it's time. It was July.
It is time. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the other thing about a tendinopathy is the longer it hangs around, the harder it is to get rid of and the more likely it is to come back because of the structural changes that happen within the tendon itself.
Good luck with that, Rick. Marie in Grafton, we'll go to you. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Hello. I'm calling about a leg pain in my lower right leg on the shin, the front part. I don't know if this would be shin splints. It's only one leg. It only is painful when I lie down, when I'm trying to sleep. And when I get up, I'm fine. Walk around all day, it's fine. Also, it seems to be if I tuck my leg underneath me when I'm sitting on the couch, for example, that seems to aggravate it.
Well, it definitely doesn't sound like shin splints to me. Mm-hmm. If it's painful when you're non-weight-bearing and walking and night pain, we almost think more nerve-related. Mm-hmm. Is it... Does it feel nervy, numbness, tingling, anything like that, Marie?
I wouldn't say tingling. No, more like a nagging, throbbing type.
Could it be popliteal arteritis?
Jeez, Jill. Wow, you really
pulled that one out of nowhere, man.
So,
well, my thought was with her sitting with her knee bent.
Yeah.
Is there something with with some sort, and she said throbbing, which made me think vascular, with something with the, her position. So when you lay down at night, Marie, is your knee typically straight or bent?
Straight. Okay. I'll lay on my back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, the first thing I thought of when it wasn't worse in the morning, so typically like a tendinopathy, it's going to be stiff first thing in the morning, and then it'll loosen up as you get going, then it'll get worse the more you're on it and the more active you are. That would be the typical pattern for a shin splint. And same way with a compartment syndrome, you would expect it to get worse with activity. So the fact that it's worse with rest makes you think it is a non-contractile tissue, either vascular or nerve.
Right. And when she said throbby, that's what sent me to vascular.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would go see a physical therapist and have them sort this out, because you're not fitting into any of our buckets.
Our typical buckets.
So you might be a bucket of your own.
The Marie bucket.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it doesn't sound like shin splints. Shin splints. Yeah. No, they get worse as you're on it and moving around a lot. Mm-hmm. And the whole with your knee bent or tucked underneath you doesn't really resonate with me at all.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck, Marie.
Yeah.
See somebody. Kind of relating to this, a listener emailed what to do about cramping in the left calf radiating down the ankle. It occurs during walks. Their husband has lumbar spinal stenosis, but would like to deal with it without invasive treatment.
Yeah, that sounds like claudication. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty classic symptom of claudication. So if her husband hasn't been to physical therapy for his spine, I would suggest that. There might be strategies that a physical therapist could suggest. So first, they might look at his posture as he's walking to see if there's something about how he's moving, how he's holding his back as he's walking that is making the claudication more likely. He may do well with walking poles that help him stay in a more upright position. So there are some various strategies that actually address the back and not the calf.
Matt in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I am 62 years old. I'm very active. And about 4 months ago, I had on my left hip, I just had like some weird, I'd move a certain way and my leg would just about give out from like a clicking in the hip area. So I wound up going to the doctor. I got an x-ray and they actually could see both joints and they thought that I had just moderate arthritis, which is average, I guess. So that they gave me some diclofenac and it resolved quickly, like within a week or two. And then my right hip started hurting a lot. And now it's been about 3 months. And my wife says I have what I think is pronounced an antalgic gait.
Antalgic gait. Very good. You're limping.
She's a nurse.
Very good.
And it's particularly painful sleeping and walking. It's that as it stretches, like if I lean backwards, the stretch across the front really bothers me. And then I also have pretty much most of my life had sciatic nerve issues, so it's just all that area. And I tend to think that it might not be the joint and that it's tendons or something, but I need like a strategy of how to figure out what it is. I'm very surgery phobic.
Yeah. You know what your strategy is, Matt? You need to see a physical therapist. So you have a pretty extensive history here. sounds like your left hip resolved with some anti-inflammatories, even though you have some moderate OA. My best guess is while that left hip was injured, you overloaded your right hip, and now that right hip is not having anything to do with it.
Right.
And it doesn't surprise me. Sleeping pain is not uncommon with people with OA. That stretch in the front is not uncommon with people with arthritis. I would suggest seeing a physical therapist. You probably need some specific hip mobilization, some good stretching, perhaps getting in a pool for a little bit. Lori, I just stole your thunder. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. But yeah, pool is a great place for you to rehab and recover from this. It sounds like you're very active. And so we can unweight your spine, unweight your hip, and get you going on some good strengthening. So, you know, do you need to have surgery for moderate OA? No, but you have to realize that, you know, your hips have been in homeostasis all this time until whatever stirred up the left one. Then it didn't take a very big change in your loading pattern to overload the right one and send it into a tizzy. So that speaks back to our point of making changes in your exercise program slowly, in your activity levels slowly, so that your body has time to adapt to it. So that's my point. And yeah, PT, it's going to help with both your back and your hip.
Good luck, Matt. Thank you very much for calling. Arlene in New Berlin, on to you now. Hi, Arlene.
Thank you. Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I enjoy your programs with the doctors very, very much, although I did work in healthcare. Lately, I've been having a problem. It's on my left side. My foot, I wear an arch support in my shoes because I'm 83 years old. But the last couple of days I've had pain in my left foot, and I don't know why. I also have a lot of problems with the nerves in my legs, and I'm trying to find a good podiatrist or whatever because the last one butchered my toenails, and I'm not going back to her. So I need to know what I need to do.
Is it your foot arch? Is it your arch?
It's just a foot arch, yes. And then every once in a while when I'm sleeping at night, when I don't know if I stretch or what, boy, I get a cramp in my leg, and if I don't get out of bed, I'm lost.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So the arch pain, you know, who knows why it happened the last couple of days? Maybe you wore different shoes. Maybe you were on your feet more. Who knows? But the other important point about arch supports is that they wear out.
Right.
So if they're getting to their end of their useful life, then they're no longer doing the job that they were hired to do. So you may need some new arch supports. It could also be that your shoes are getting worn out. So one of the important things when we were talking way back when about stretching the Achilles for plantar fasciitis is that if your shoes are not stabilizing your foot well, your arch supports are a waste of money. So if you're wearing, for example, some of those sloppy tennis shoes like I'm currently wearing at this moment, you can pronate, which is you can sort of flatten your arch right over the top of that arch support if the back of your shoe is not stabilizing your heel well. So, you know, those teenagers need to tie their shoes. You need to have shoes that support your foot well so your arch support can do what it needs to do. But it sounds like you have a number of things going on. You have some nerve issues. You're getting cramping during the night. That's all sort of a neurogenic claudication thing. So those things need to get treated. If you haven't seen a physical therapist, you know, get into physical therapy and have them take a look at this whole cluster of things from your back to your foot.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Arlene. You just reminded me I need to get a new pair of shoes for my exercises in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
I just went past 1,100 kilometers on this pair, which is, 600 miles, which is...
Most people say between 400 and 600 miles is kind of the magic point.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. So
that was running through my mind as you were talking. Ron in River Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I'm 78 years old, and when I was
a dumb kid way back 14, 15. I did a jump down some stairs to see if I could do it. Well, I ended up tearing my ligament and stuff like that. And I rested a lot, but no surgery or anything. But that has always bothered me. I walk about 2 miles a day, and my ankle will swell up, and I wear compression, like socks just for the ankle. And I just wondering if there's anything else I could do.
Well, when you said you tore a ligament, what ligament are you referring to when you did that thing where you jumped down a flight of stairs, which every kid has done?
Yeah, but this is a long flight of stairs. It was a dare. It was one of those dumb things, okay? I don't want to admit it, so I hope nobody hears that. Anyway,
that's okay.
Anyway, I don't know. I just remember I rested for a long time, and that was all that was done. But it seems to be up the side of my ankle.
Okay, so going up. So the side of his ankle. So maybe it was like a lateral ankle sprain.
Okay.
And not your Achilles. Sure. Is that right? Your Achilles is intact.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So probably some ankle chronic ankle instability.
Right. Some OA probably.
Correct. At his ankle joint. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's why it swells.
Yes. So wearing the compression socks will help with the swelling. I think that's a really good idea. I love the fact that you are interested in maintaining physical activity by walking 2 miles a day. I am wondering if there's some other physical activity we should have him do that's not weight-bearing.
Bicycling,
a stationary bike, mm-hmm. a rowing machine, mm-hmm. A recumbent bike, mm-hmm. the pool, something else like that, just to offload this a little bit, just because that's a lot of load on a arthritic joint.
It is. And again, as we age, more diversity is good. So it's wonderful that people are walking. And I do not ever want to discourage people from walking.
Right.
It's cheap. It's convenient. Like, it doesn't require anything special.
Carbon neutral.
There you go. But it's also useful, if possible, to mix up your activities and add something else so you're loading your bones, joints, muscles in a different way. So, yes, getting some non-weight-bearing things. And, you know, if you haven't done any strengthening for the muscles in your lower leg to support your ankle, seeing a physical therapist for one or two visits to get some of those strengthening exercises you can do at home would be useful as well.
Good luck with that, Ron. Thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, our physical therapist from UW-Madison. Great to have them with us. And lots of callers, lots of phone, lots of emails as well. Richard emailed us after 9 months of physical therapy for a lower leg pain issue. The doctors finally did a hip x-ray and found that he had bone on bone on his hip. Pain was radiating from his lower leg, causing it to appear as if pain was caused by an issue below the knee. For 2 years, he would have sworn that this was a lower leg injury. After a cortisone shot, the pain was nearly completely eliminated.
Wow. Wow. Well, it's a little unusual for the hip to refer that far down, so I can kind of hear Richard's surprise with this. But again, patients don't always read the textbook. So if what we're doing to treat that lower leg condition isn't getting better, as a physical therapist, you need to start looking up the chain, digging into other areas, things like that. So it sounds like Richard understands now that his primary issue is his hip, and I hope he's on a good hip strengthening program.
Yeah, good for him to continue seeking the right answer.
Exactly.
Steve in Chippewa Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 64. I walk a lot. And this is something I noticed a couple of years ago. It happened the first time. But if I'm out walking and let's say I have my phone in my left hand, I'll suddenly get, you know, this happens once every couple of months, a pain in my left knee and in my left elbow at simultaneous. It feels like an electric shock in both my knee and my elbow. It has to be something in my my back, I would imagine. But what do you guys think?
Boy, simultaneous. So let me start by saying there's no direct connection from your elbow to your back other than like central cord.
Right, unless it's something very high in the cervical spine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that is one of the most odd things. And it's truly simultaneous?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like as somebody flips a switch and it's like an electric shock in my knee and my elbow. I mean, it's very surprising when it happens.
So do you ever carry your phone in your right hand?
I do, and I've never had this on the right hand side. It just, you know, huh. I mean, I, you know, and it's just this, and that's why I walk with a physician most days, and that's what he told me.
Oh,
there's no connection.
I love it. You have your own personal person that you're walking with that told you this. Yeah, that is very unusual. And I'm trying to think about stepping funny and does that throw off your arm or something? And I can't make any connection whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean the thing that's odd about it is that it happens at the same time. So if you had like symptoms in your elbow and then you would also get some symptoms in your knee, but they didn't occur simultaneously.
Right.
You know, temporal thing that gets me.
Is it possible that the pain that comes in the knee is so sharp that it feels like it's coming from the elbow?
It's also possible that it starts at the knee, and because of that, he moves his head or neck, and he gets the pain, he gets the symptoms in his elbow. I would say that it probably comes from the knee first.
Simultaneously, almost simultaneously.
Almost simultaneously. We'd have to slap a little EMG on there to see if it really is.
Why don't you ask that physician that you walk with if he wants to investigate this further? Because I'm having difficulty seeing a connection as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think that's a good point, that it could be a split-second mm-hmm. difference, but it feels like mm-hmm. it's identical.
Right, right. I would say that's, if I had to throw my money on a hypothesis, it would be that he gets the thing in his knee and then his immediate response before it even reaches the pain levels in his brain.
Correct.
Like it's a reflexive
it's a loop.
Thing. It's a loop. And that he does something with his arm or neck in response to the knee that causes the elbow symptoms. Run that by your physician friend and let us know what they say.
Yeah. And the only thing I would do is I keep an eye and make sure it's not getting more frequent.
Right.
And I would also pay attention to where in the walk it's occurring. Is it towards mm-hmm. the end? Is fatigue a factor? Things like that. Mm-hmm. Just see if you can follow a pattern at all, Steve. Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. Let us know, Steve.
Yeah, get back to us on that one.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling. Jim in South Range, on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. I have a question about what your therapists are saying about walking poles. Do you mean like ski poles?
Yeah.
Longer one.
No, they can be like ski poles. They make walking poles now that are very similar to ski poles. So, you know, they have a grip on them with, you know, straps for your wrists so you don't lose them. But yeah, you just use them to provide one more point of stability while you're walking. And sometimes it helps you maintain a more upright posture and gives you one more point of stability if you were to lose your balance.
Right. And they're telescoping ones, mm-hmm. so you can adjust the height, and they have a nice rubber tip on them, things mm-hmm. like that.
And it makes them nice for travel then.
Right.
And then you're swinging your arms back and forth, mm-hmm. which is also, I guess there's been some research on that, mm-hmm. for even weight loss.
Right, yes. Right. It adds another level of workload to it, so it makes it a little bit harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great idea. I should have invented them. Again,
right?
That long list of things I should have invented, right up there with pool noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, good luck with your potentially new walking mm-hmm. poles. Nancy in Wautoma, on to you. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I'm 72. I have a scoliosis, I'm told, in kind of my lower back area going down. Mm-hmm. And it started to cut. I'm extremely active. I have cutting rain horses, so I'm loading bay and, you know, hay and doing seed and taking care of my place. But I started to get pain in my hip, radiating to the point of my hip. They did x-rays. So there's nothing in the hip that is caused by the scoliosis, doing some pinching of nerves, which is going down into my hip. And the nurse practitioner pretty much wrote it off and said, well, there's nothing you can do, refer you to pain management. I said, I am not convinced that just trying to mask the symptoms rather than dealing with the cause is the way I want to go. I'm not a drug taker. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's kind of a movable thing. You know, the nerve pain kind of moves around sometimes to the right of my, because it's the right hip. Sometimes to the right of the spine, there'll be a pinching there. And then, of course, the almost bruised pain, yep, that you get in the hip.
Yep.
And so I'm wondering if you have any better suggestions than just saying, well, there's nothing you can do. Just
oh, for sure. Many, many things. So I'm sorry, Nancy, I didn't hear where you were from.
Watoma.
I'm from Watoma.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there is a group of practitioners that are trained in what we call the Schroth method of treating scoliosis. It is S-C-H-R-O-T-H, the Schroth method. And it is all neuromuscular reeducation, teaching you how to recruit the correct muscles, tons in postural education, a lot of body awareness, a lot of breathing. And it sounds, as active as you are, this would be
ideal
for you. So to find a Schroth-trained physical therapist would be ideal. I'm not exactly sure how to go about doing that.
You can Google Schroth, and you can look by your zip code to find the closest practitioner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a big clinic in Stevens Point that has one of the kind of the founding people trained in Schroth. And so there's a lot of people trained in Wisconsin. So I think you would benefit from that very, very much.
Yeah. Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Luck.
And you're absolutely right to take charge of this, and especially given that your symptoms are dynamic. So when they're dynamic, it makes you optimistic that you're going to be able to control this.
Yeah.
Good luck. Nancy, thank you. Tim in Kalamazoo emailed us. His wife suffers from a condition called Haglund's deformity.
Oh, yeah.
His wife does not wear high heels or any uncomfortable shoes. The condition causes her much discomfort on her heel and Achilles tendon when they go for walks. She did get some comfort from shoe inserts, but these did wear out over time. Mm-hmm. How could PT help her? Also, do shoe inserts help or hurt this condition?
Those are all great questions. So Haglund's deformity is that bump that Lori talked about earlier. And basically, it is a result of or due to what we think of as usually excessive pronation in the foot. So the foot, the arch has to come down to the ground and come back up through a really large range of motion. And you end up getting this kind of spin wear pattern on your heel. You lay down excessive bone, and it's called a Haglund's deformity. So orthotics are very helpful. They do wear out over time, as Lori alluded to. So I would encourage Tim to make sure that his wife keeps her orthotics kind of new.
Yeah.
Shoe wear is also very important. And then you mentioned, what can physical therapy do? So if you only have it, again, we go to that whole, why did I only get this on one side? When if I'm walking, I would look up and down the chain to see if there's some hip weakness, knee weakness, tightness in certain muscles that a physical therapist can address to kind of balance the patient out a little bit better.
Or a leg length deformity.
Yes.
And then if you even keep going farther up, a scoliosis can create what's called an apparent leg length difference. And so that's why you can't just look at the specific spot, kind of like the gentleman who called or who emailed earlier with the leg pain, and it turned out to be originating in his hip. That's why we emphasize the looking all the way up and down the chain.
Phoebe in Fitchburg emailed, pros and cons of speed bridge Achilles repair. 25 years ago, when she was 40, she had her ruptured Achilles repaired surgically and then casted. Although she's still quite active, the calf muscle in the leg is still much smaller than the healthy right leg. Thoughts on why the calf above the repaired Achilles never recovered?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And we see that a lot, you know, with the immobilization after you have to have your Achilles tendon repair. And let's just talk about an Achilles tendon repair for a moment. It is a primary repair, meaning that they're sewing those ends back together. So the analogy I give people is it's like those corn silks you see coming out of the ear of a corn. It's like sewing those back together.
So the issue being, if those tendons that are attached to the muscle fibers. So realize that tendon is attached. All those tendon fascicles are attached to the muscle fibers. If they don't reattach every tendon fascicle back to every muscle fiber, some of those fibers are no longer going to be attached, so they are no longer going to get loaded. So because of the whole corn silk analogy, which was quite lovely, Jill.
Thank you. Being from Iowa, I want to
being from Iowa, I'll throw in a little bit of Iowa. Yeah. Your chances are that some of those muscle fascicles were not reattached to the or to the tendon. And so you're only going to be able to strengthen whatever muscle fibers are attached to the tendon fascicles.
So
it's not, yeah, no, there's nothing else to be done. So she's
she's done as whatever she can do.
Well, whatever she has is what she's going to have at this point.
Correct.
Whatever she has is what she's going to have.
So you're not going to be going back in for surgery.
No.
And not 25 years later.
And this is where you look at what other muscles, plantar flex, that I could get strong. Could I work on my peroneals? Could I work on my posterior tib and other muscles that have that plantar flexion component to them? That may be able to assist with
The question is there a functional issue here,
right,
or is it just visual?
Right.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, our physical therapist, will be with us right up until 12:30. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. Lots of good emails today at ideas@WPR.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jill and Lori. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking with our regular physical therapist on the program today, Larry Mueller here with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lots of emails, and our lines are all filled, so I think we'll go right to the phones and to John in Duluth, Minnesota. John, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. For a number of years, I've been living with some very painful feet. And I did go into podiatrists and had it diagnosed as plantar plate tears in both feet, an atrophy of the plantar plates and outright tears. And it's basically the big toe and the next two toes to each of the big toes on both feet. I've been prescribed orthotics to insert into shoes. They do help, but it's still very uncomfortable. It's like walking on balled-up socks.
Yeah.
And, just wondering if there's anything physical therapy-wise that could be done. I did talk to a surgeon, and they actually did not recommend surgery to try and repair the tissue. So yeah. I thought that's a pretty bold statement coming from a surgeon to not recommend surgery.
Yeah.
Right. Well, especially if the tears had been quite some time ago, John, and then the tissues had kind of retracted back, it would be very hard to kind of approximate that tissue. But the plantar plate is really important in offering stability in kind of what we call our first ray or our big toe, if you will. And what most people don't realize is how important that great toe is for walking. You need 50 to 70 degrees to be able to push off appropriately, and you need to be able to push off a stable base. And a rupture of your plantar plate will cause some instability in that push off. And so having custom orthotics is a really good idea. Seeing a physical therapist to see if some intrinsic toe strengthening or intrinsic strengthening of your feet could be helpful is a good strategy. I don't know that it's going to, I don't know how much of a change it'll make for you because you've had this condition for a long time, but seeing a physical therapist for a couple visits, I think would be a good idea. And then the other thing I would consider is perhaps performing some cardiovascular activity, things like that, that's non-weight bearing. So perhaps getting in a pool or doing biking or something like that to increase your cardiovascular activity would be great, and not use walking as your mainstay of exercise and just kind of keep exercising for kind of normal activities of daily living. But plantar plates are very difficult to treat, for sure, and fairly unusual.
Yeah. John, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kathy in Madison, what's on your mind?
Well, I hurt my shoulder in June, at the end of June, and I went to the doctor and urgent care. She did an x-ray and determined that it hurt my rotator cuff and gave me a series of exercises to do and an order to see a physical therapist. Well, you know, I had a certain amount of hubris and did the exercises myself, and now it's, you know, almost 4 months later, and I don't have a frozen shoulder, but I still have pain, and I don't have full range of motion yet. So my question is it ever too late to go to a physical therapist?
No.
Oh, my no. Oh, my no.
Let's save you before this gets worse. So it sounds to me like you don't have a frozen shoulder, but it sounds like you've lost some range of motion, and you could be set up to get a frozen shoulder, Kathy. So no, it's not too late. And we, yes, absolutely get in to see a physical therapist.
How much motion do you have? Like, can you reach behind your back to tuck your shirt in?
With pain.
Okay.
With pain. How far can you raise your arm overhead?
All the way.
Okay.
But if I do like a backstroke kind of a swim,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't go the same. My left arm doesn't go the same as my right arm.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to see somebody sooner rather than later. So the question is this a developing frozen shoulder, or is there something else going on in your shoulder? So, yes, hubris. But it goes back to when we talked at the very beginning of the show about Achilles tendinopathy. And, you know, you have exercises, but are they the right exercises? And are they dosed properly? So that's what the physical therapist will do. Instead of, if it was so easy, if you had a rotator cuff tear, just to hand somebody a group of exercises and say, go do this, you'll be all better. Well, we'd be out of a job.
Right.
But we're not. You can't get in to see us for 6 weeks.
Right.
And that's because it's not one size fits all. We may choose some of those same exercises, but how they are dosed for you is different. So that's the important fact that really we need to think about.
So what is it? What causes a frozen shoulder? I mean, and what would you describe as a frozen shoulder? And
so
idiopathic,
yes,
in most cases.
In most cases, are idiopathic, meaning they just come out of the blue. The highest prevalence of population we see them in is women between the ages of 40 and 60, especially if you have a history of diabetes. But most of them are idiopathic. Some people, or they have a very, very, very small something or other.
Trauma.
Right. I saw a woman who had a frozen shoulder after she had a mammogram, and she had to position her arm in an awkward position and hold it there. And that's the only thing she could think of that happened to her. And weeks later, she developed a frozen shoulder. And they can be very painful, very debilitating, you know, take a year and a half to resolve.
Months, right. 18 months to
resolve.
And so
it means you can't tuck your shirt
in. You lose motion, most notably in the rotation. You can't externally rotate, like to put your hand in your coat, and you can't internally rotate and extend.
Mm.
I mean, you can't get your hand behind your back for, you know, self-care, toileting, or
tucking a
shirt in, or pulling up your pants behind you, all those things. And they are extremely painful.
Right. I had one woman tell me it was worse than childbirth.
Oh.
Well, there you go. Well, Larry, how do you know? I mean, come on.
Well, my wife practically put her fingers through my palm of my hand.
There you go. You had the indirect pain. Exactly.
The indirect pain.
But they can be very painful, very debilitating. And if she has a rotator cuff pathology on top of this, you know.
Yeah, it gets messy.
Yeah, so Kathy, go in and see somebody.
Sooner than later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Donna in Spooner, we'll move on to you now. Hi, Donna.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night with my, especially one foot, just burning and tingling. And if I get out of bed, sometimes I can, like, walk it out. It's like cramping. But it seems to be getting worse the older I am. I'm 79. It happens mostly in my right foot, sometimes in the left. And I don't, is this the start of neuropathy? Can physical therapy help something like that?
It sounds more like it's probably coming from your spine. We would call that a claudication. It's a classic symptom where people wake up in the middle of the night with cramping in their foot, and if they hang their leg over the edge of the bed, it usually gets better.
Because of the dependent position.
Yeah, because of that dependent position. So getting up and moving around is a pretty classic pain-relieving activity. So since this is getting worse and it is disrupting your sleep, which is super important for all of us, that's when you heal, I would get in to see somebody and have them take a look at this, probably coming from your back, and they can talk to you about some certain exercises to do. They can talk to you about positions when you're sleeping to prevent this from happening and so on. But you want to put a stop to this before it gets any worse.
Good luck, Donna. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Cal in Menominee, Michigan, we'll go to you.
Yeah, this is Cal. I kind of got a happy story on a terrible Achilles tendon tear. I tore my left Achilles tendon about 12 years ago. It was diagnosed as an oblique tear, 8 centimeters. So it wasn't completely tore, but it hurt like you know what when it happened. And after going to my primary doctor and some medications and stuff, and I limped around for a little bit, I was referred to sports medicine. Saw a guy there, a surgeon, and he wanted to do surgery on it to repair it. And I told him, I said, well, I think I'm going to wait. And he says, you better not. He says, it's not going to heal. You need surgery. So I did wait. I said, I limped around for a while and I took it easy. And his last words to me were, you will be back. And after about 6 to 8 months, the pain went away. It apparently healed. And I haven't had any problems with it ever since. That's a little thicker now because he said I'd get scar tissue. But with surgery, you get scar tissue. So I thought, what the heck? What do I have to lose? That was a happy ending for me.
Yeah, that is a happy ending. You know, my guess is because it was not a complete tear, because you had some of your Achilles intact, it acted a bit like a splint to allow the remaining fibers to heal in or to close that gap with some scar tissue. If it had been a complete tear where the ends were not in contact with each other, I don't think you would have had as good a result. But yeah, that, you know, basically the remaining fibers acted a little bit like a surgical repair in that it held things together enough for the rest of it to heal. That is good news.
Yes. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Nancy emailed us. She had Achilles tendon issues about 6 years ago. It began in her right Achilles and then was in her left. She wound up wearing a boot for a while. She had great physical therapy and no trouble with either Achilles since. Her PT told her wearing clogs and sandals with no backstrap may have contributed to her Achilles problems. What do you two think about that?
My guess is what she was talking about is if she didn't have a shoe that had a heel counter that kind of controlled her calcaneus with walking, if Nancy had pronated a lot or something like that and wore backless shoes where our calcaneus is not well controlled. And actually the control of your whole foot really comes from your heel. So if Nancy had kind of what I would refer to as sloppy feet for lack of better terms and was wearing shoes where she had no control of her calcaneus, my guess is it could have potentially been a contributing factor in this case.
Right. But the point is in this case.
Right.
So that's not a one size fits all because
correct.
There will be a number of people with Achilles problems that do better in something right. that's open in the back where there's not any contact or rubbing on the back of the shoe. So, again, it's all very individualized, and what works for one person may not work for the next person. So if you have an Achilles problem, don't just ask your neighbor, right?
Right.
Chris called and has been diagnosed with tennis elbow, and the cause is she got it relating to her job. She's a trucker, has to do a lot of tightening and unloading. She's seeing a chiropractor. What exercises can she do to decrease pain with tennis elbow?
Right. So my best guess is if she's doing things work related, or Chris is doing things work related, it's a lot of gripping and holding and then twisting. And so if it's truly tennis elbow, what Chris would benefit from is some stretching with their elbow straight and then bending their hand or their palm down to get a nice stretch through those muscles. And I do that frequently throughout the day. And then the other thing we know helps with this falls in that category of tendinopathy that we talked about at the beginning of the hour. The other thing we know that helps with that is eccentrics, where if Chris held, for example, a large can of peaches, why are you shaking your head?
No, because, so here's where we're going to show some differences here, because of the big grip.
Well, I don't want a small grip.
I think a small grip is better than a big grip. I think the big grip contributes to it.
So I don't want to. So I think we want Baby Bear Porridge Land, not too big, not too small. So I don't want a grip that's so small that's like a pen size, because then you actually end up with active inhibition here. But if it's too big, then I think it's a factor as well. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't want her gripping something super small. So I would say something about a
baseball bat size.
Baseball bat size is good.
At
the handle.
At the handle.
So, okay. But I don't want a huge open grip, but I don't want a tight grip either, because I think then you end up with shortening here.
You think so?
I do.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I usually tell people to use a hammer, a 1-pound hammer.
Well, that's about the same as a mm-hmm. baseball.
Okay,
because it's about a pound to start with. The other thing that I think Chris should think about is a wrist splint. So you'll notice that the two exercises Jill gave you both involve the wrist, not the elbow. So tennis elbow is not the result of activities at your elbow, but the result of activities at your wrist and hand, because those muscles are working to stabilize your wrist while you're moving it. And to stabilize during grip. So people with tennis elbow classically can't lift a gallon of milk. They can't open a door because of the grip factor. That's why Jill and I were fussing about what's the right size grip, because grip is super important in this problem. So using a wrist splint where your fingers are all open, there's just a little hole where you slide your thumb through and it stabilizes across your wrist. It's like using a crutch or a cane to offload your lower extremity some. The wrist splint will offload your wrist muscles during the heavy activities of lifting. When she's lifting and moving things, that's when he or she should be using that to rest those muscles.
Peter from Eden emailed us. He's an active 70-year-old male, and while driving his car, he gets cramping in his right leg from his buttocks to the arch of his foot. Quite uncomfortable, but he can walk it off shortly after arriving at his destination. He does remove his wallet while driving. Is there anything else he can do to alleviate?
It sounds like it's probably sciatica from being in that prolonged kind of stretched out position. I don't know if Peter can use cruise control if he has it, but that would be the first thing that I would consider. What else are you thinking, Lori?
Well, just when you're at home doing stretching of your piriformis and your gluteal muscles and changing position frequently, it basically boils down to your back and your sciatic nerve don't like being in that one position for long periods of time, so shifting your position around.
The other thing I'll say is some cars have those really scoopy bucket seats.
Yes.
And I think if you're in a scoopy bucket seat, it kind of folds your hips in and puts your piriformis on stretch. So sometimes just kind of flattening out your bucket seat by putting a towel or something across it to kind of make it a little bit more flat versus kind of shaped like a U could be helpful. So depending on how Peter's seat is set up, that may be something he wants to consider.
That makes a lot of sense. And cruise control will then, I have found, help you from getting a speeding ticket.
There we go. Helps with many domains, Larry.
So my van seats were like that, Jill. And it rolled my left hip in.
Yes.
And I had left hip pain for the longest time until I changed seats.
There you go.
Bill in Sheboygan wonders about Morton's neuroma and foot neuropathy. Who should he go to for a diagnosis as to what he might have? He's wondering if he has one or the other.
Well, he could have both. So that's the first thing. You know, we like to think that we have A or B, but often we have some component of both. So he can see a physical therapist who can not only evaluate his foot for what might be wrong with it, but also provide him some treatments.
Mm-hmm.
Jen emailed us, her daughter's 17, a volleyball player, diagnosed with both of the spondees. She's going to PT regularly and doing her home exercises, been cleared to limited play, but she's now nervous about diving and re-injuring her spine. Is there more she should do to ensure another injury doesn't occur?
Well, the spondee probably, it can occur in many ways, but a spondee or spondylolysis or spondylolisthesis, I'm not sure what she had, is typically due to repeated extension maneuvers. So, for example, a volleyball player at the net as a blocker where they arch way back, or as a hitter or serving. Diving can be a factor, but it's typically not as much as those other things. So making sure that she's really able to fire her core muscles and stabilize at all times, even when she's diving, would be really important. I always want to make sure that their lats are really good and stretched out so they're not going into early extension when they take their arms overhead.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with awareness of your body position and what muscles you're activating. And you're absolutely right. If your thoracic spine and your shoulder are inflexible, you are going to compensate at the lumbar spine and overextend. So the spondees are pretty common in volleyball, gymnastics, football.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Lynn wonders, she's had pain for months in what she's calling her thumb joint. But when she's mentioned it to her primary doctor, he says it's coming from somewhere further back in the hand. It hurts near where the thumb attaches to the rest of her hand. It hurts. It comes and goes as well. It can feel kind of painful, and then sometimes it can just shoot in excruciating pain.
Mm-hmm.
What could be causing this?
My first thought is carpometal CMC arthritis. So arthritis of your thumb joint, and it is back kind of by your wrist. It is one of our two saddle joints in our body, and it is the reason that our thumb is as mobile as it is. And so it's very prone to getting osteoarthritis. So Lynn would benefit, my best guess is, from seeing a certified hand therapist or somebody who specializes in hands, whether it's a physical therapist or an occupational therapist, to get some strengthening recommendations, perhaps a custom splint, a thumb spica splint to hold Lynn's thumb in a correct position, and then talk about modifications of activities of daily living.
Mm-hmm. There are lots of tools available with modified gripping for people who have arthritis. It's a very common site of arthritis, particularly in women.
Mm-hmm.
Always a pleasure to see the two of you.
Good to see you. It's always
great to see you.
Yeah,
well,
so
and
nice.
We'll see you in
great
about
day.
A month.
Yeah, sounds
if
great.
Not before. Thank you so
Perfect.
Much.
Thank you.
Jill Tye Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to have them back, and they'll be with us in a month, and we'll do this all over again. Coming up tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, we'll hear about the adventures of a Mississippi riverboat captain. He's got written a dandy book. Then we receive a visit from the creators of the hit comedy movie Airplane. They'll be with me in the studio tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.